articles from the archive of About Facts, my former website. The rush to develop a craft with saucer performance. UFO mania was everywhere in the 1950s. Saucer-shaped craft had been sighted everywhere. Hollywood was churning out grade B flying saucer movies and even some that were considered quite good, like the movie The Day the Earth Stood Still. Not only people were wondering what those saucers in the sky were, but secretly, governments were also wondering. There were reports that saucers had penetrated the radar over Washington, D.C., and saucers were hovering over the White House. Pursuit jets had gone after saucers, but it was like a Model T car trying to catch a modern Ferrari, no competition. As soon as the jets would get within sighting distance, the saucers would then step on the gas and they were gone. It wasn't only Washington that had the saucer problem, but it existed all over the world. It was natural that governments would be interested and scared, even though they continued to say it was just misidentification of temperature inversions and the like. Secretly, these governments were investigating these phenomena, while some were even trying to copy it. It seems that three countries were cooperating on the project to build a flying saucer. These countries were Great Britain, the United States, and Canada. The project to build the saucer was known by various names, but the most popular seems to be Project Y. In order to hide what they were really doing, they let it leak out they were working on a saucer-type aircraft, but the aircraft they showed was the Avrocar. This was a silly-looking, saucer-shaped craft that had a large fan under it so it could hover, but not too well, and was a small craft. Pictures abounded of this thing swaying back and forth trying to hover, and different laughing pilots sitting in the cockpit. The truth of the matter is they were really working on the Avroplane, a vehicle that they hoped would fly over 2,500 miles per hour. I don't have a picture of the plane, but I made a sketch, very rough since I am not an artist, just to give you an idea of what it looked like. If the public would have ever known the truth at the time, they would have been astounded. The facts seem to indicate that the plane was being constructed in Canada by a British engineer named John Frost, along with other engineers such as Ray Gibson of Avro. The project was supposed to build a saucer aircraft with the best performance possible, but it changed during experimentation into a sleek plane. Avro was a British company that had a subsidiary in Canada. One of the things that was to make this plane revolutionary were small jet nozzles, which were designed to give the aircraft increased thrust, making the plane fly faster. The goal was Mach 5 or 5 times the speed of sound. This seemed impossible in the early 50s. The plane would take off by standing on its tail. It is hard to see in the picture, but notice the flat area on the tail. Avro had injected over $5 million into a secret project, including $2 million from the US. Today this would have been chump change, but in the early 1950s this was serious money. On December 3, 1954, the Leader Post, Regina, Saskatchewan, Canada, ran a front-page headline declaring saucer project cost too large. The Canadian Defense Department had cancelled the project, stating it was impractical at the time. Some of the engineers thought the plane could have eventually attained at least some of its goals and were remorseful at the cancellation. Were these engineers just disappointed at the cancellation of a project they had invested years of their lives in, or did the project actually show some promise? Some people have said that the Avroplane has some similarities to our stealth aircraft. I am not an engineer, but the only thing I can see is the absence of harsh lines and folds that register on radar. Of course, the SR-71 Blackbird, a plane that even today holds many of the world's speed records, did come out in the 60s, but how many know that the A-12 was a plane that looked almost exactly like the SR-71? Was a little faster and first constructed in 1962 and had its engine tested as early as 1958? Was the A-12 built from lessons learned in building the Avroplane? We may never know the answer, but I am not a big believer in coincidence in these matters. The A-12's speed is classified, but a speed over Mach 3 is admitted to, very close to the 2,500 miles per hour of the Avro project. Was the US taking the best of one project and using it in another project of its own? I can't say for sure, but the front of the A-12 and the front of the Avro plane both seem to have shovel-shaped fronts. The Carr spacecraft. In the 1950s, a man named Otis T. Carr claimed to invent a flying machine that used an anti-gravity motor. He even took out a U.S. patent on his device. The patent was $2,912,244. It was patented as an amusement device. Carr claimed he had invented an anti-gravity engine called the Utron or Utron. This is not clear. Carr offered to build and deliver the engine to the U.S. government without one penny of investment by the U.S. public. He claimed the engine could power a spacecraft to the moon in about 7 hours. Any vehicle accelerated to an axis rotation relative to its attractive inertial mass immediately becomes activated by free space energy and acts as an independent force, said Carr. Carr's engine had only two moving parts. The best way to visualize it is to think of two spinning tops, one on top of the other and both spinning in different directions. Carr stated that when counter rotation matches forward rotation, a body loses its polarity and acts as an independent force, and that this causes the counter rotating mass to become weightless and enables it to escape the gravitational forces. In 1952, an independent lab verified that a model of 4 inches in diameter produced 1,000 tons of energy. The US government didn't become interested, however, until the late 1950s. It is said that Otis Carr had become friends with Nikola Tesla, the greatest electrical genius who ever lived, and conversed with him at his hotel on a regular basis. His vehicle was actually finished in 1947, but he couldn't interest anyone in it, although he tried repeatedly. Carr said the core of his spaceship would be a huge battery which would spin at the velocity of the external craft and which would be recharged, he said, by its motion. Carr declared such a battery, built to any size, could be designed to power the largest electric generating plant, operate an automobile, heat a house or power any conceivable machine or device. In 1957, Otis T. Carr, president, and Norman Evans Colton, director of sales, were interviewed by radio host Long John Nebel. Nebel told the audience that OTC Enterprises Incorporated of Baltimore was selling the spacecraft for $20 million each and that the craft was a saucer-shaped object. Nebel had a working model. Yes, a working model. Carr told Nebel that after the first few craft were built, that the price would drop to $4 million each. Carr claimed he had seen UFOs and that they were electrified, and he recognized that fact since he had been working on the same principle for years. Carr told Nebel his design utilizes gravity, electromagnetism, and electromotive force and a relative field to get its functional operation. He said in plain English, it's a central power core. Now this is what we call an accumulator. In a vernacular sense, it is a factory. It is a storage cell, an accumulation of storage cells which provide an electromotive force in the same manner that any known battery produces an electromotive force. Carr also told Nebel that he had sent a brochure of his system to the president, who was Eisenhower at the time, but never received an answer. Carr went on to explain that the craft would have its own internal gravity at all times and it could become almost weightless when landing, and it didn't need a heat shield because there would be an electrified field around it to protect it. Sounds like the air spike. On April 15, 1959, a launch event was held in Oklahoma City with hundreds of people invited. They were told that a model saucer would rise 400 to 600 feet off the ground from a gravel pit. An announcement was made that the launching was being postponed due to a bad bearing. But Carr seems to have been admitted into the hospital for 8 days with lung hemorrhage, and it seems during preliminary pre-flight testing the accumulator developed a leak which sprayed mercury all over the inside mechanism. Mr. R.O., an employee of Otis Carr's company, announced that he will go to the moon on December 7, 1959. The trip will take 5 hours and he will stay for 7 days and return. The ship he will use is 45 feet in diameter and weighs 30 tons. It is powered by the Utron engine. On June 2, 1960, Carr is very distressed by the fact it is being said that his trip to California is for the purpose of selling stock. The U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission had an injunction placed against Carr, ordering him to stop selling unregistered stock. In January of 1961, the Attorney General of New York, Louis J. Lefkowitz, says Carr has swindled $50,000. True magazine calls Carr a hoaxer. Did the Utron saucer ever fly? I see no record of it. Could it have been a cover-up to hide advanced technology? It seems a possibility, but who knows? Just the fact that Tesla may have had some input, no matter how little, makes one really wonder.